Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. I'm so glad you guys are tuning into this episode. Whatever it is that you're dealing with today specifically or going through at the moment, I just hope that your takeaway from this episode is going to give you what you need. Is it hope, inspiration, validation, some tips on how to treat this or detox more affordable? Whatever it is that you need today, I hope that that's what you get from this episode. And if you want to continue to help me share my voice and our voice in the community, please go into the about of this podcast, scroll to the bottom, click on that donation link. Hi, listeners. Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. I wanted to make sure you all listened to the July 31st episode with Stephen Davis, the founder of the Nikki Watch technology. As you would have heard, he has been so generous as to gift a watch to one of my listeners. So you'll want to be sure to get into this amazing drawing. If you'd like to enter to win a free Nikki watch, you'll need to follow and like my podcast and email me your name and phone number to limeandbeyondwithtanya@gmail.com. Be sure and enter as you may just be the lucky winner. I will be doing the drawing on my September 11th episode, so be sure to listen in and see if I announce your name. As always, thank you so much for being such dedicated listeners. It's your support that allows me to continue to produce these episodes full of hope and inspiration. Today, my guest, Allie, I'm so excited to have her. She's going to obviously share her Lyme journey with us. And then we're going to talk about all the things that she's doing in the Lyme community. And kind of just before the show, we talked a little bit about some new exciting things that we're doing together with Congress each year. So it'll be fun to kind of chat about that as well. So I'm excited to hear your journey. And thank you so much for taking the time to join me, Allie.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Absolutely. We need to hear these stories of success, right? Because the journey is so, it's just a rough journey, right? And we have the highs and the lows and so many lows. And so to have people on the show that can share their journey and be vulnerable about the not so pretty parts of the journey, right? Because there's a lot of them. So it's a great way, you know, for the listeners to just kind of regroup, step back, take a breath, you know, and just reset and just know that there is an ending to this, right? And not
Absolutely.
To give up. Yeah.
I think when you're in the thick of it, sometimes it can be so hard to see that good days will come again and not every day will be full of suffering. And I remember that when I was at my worst, when I would read or listen to or watch interviews like you do and stories, right? On people that had kind of made it out onto the other side. It's really what keeps you going, I think, is that exposure. So I'm grateful for everything you do.
Well, thank you. And I absolutely agree for sure. So I'm excited to have you on this other side so that you get to share with all the listeners, right?
Yes.
So where do we start? How far back do we go? Do you remember? Like a lot of times we don't even remember, right? Like we just, we get diagnosed, you know, a few years ago and they're like, but actually I've been sick all my life. So, so do you know, do you remember?
Yeah. So it's funny because I'm like a total city girl. Grew up around Chicago, went to college in Chicago, and ironically said I'd never leave Chicago. And now I live in Nashville. That's still another city. And I'm not like a woodsy person, you know, I'm not somebody that is typically where you would think ticks would be. Now I know 8 years later, ticks are everywhere and people get bit, you know, in the city of Chicago left and right. But at the end of the first year of dating my now husband, his family every year, every August goes up to Northern Michigan. And I went up to Northern Michigan for the first time. And thankfully, like my family is originally from the East Coast. So my parents, like my mom specifically, knew enough about Lyme disease and like the danger of ticks to say like, wear a hat, wear tick spray, wear socks, you know. And I did all of those things. And I still came home from that trip and immediately had cold and flu-like symptoms. And developed a rash, not a bullseye rash, but a rash that I now call my spotted leopard rash all over my body, which is more of a rickettsial rash. And so that's the only reason that I know around the time that I was bit and when I contracted it is because I came home from that trip. I had flu-like symptoms, pain all over my body, that rickettsial rash, and of course went to see my GP at a very major hospital system who told me that I had a summer flu and sent me home, and I was still sick 2 weeks later and, you know, went back and asked to be tested for Lyme disease, and they refused to test me. They said it was so rare that it wasn't a concern. So unfortunately or unfortunately, I do know where my journey with this started.
Wow. And, you know, and you could have been one of the lucky ones to get a diagnosis right away, you know, and in that case, you get, you know, hopefully the 6-8 weeks of antibiotics, and a lot of times we're good. So it's really too bad that you couldn't get anybody to listen to you, right? Because again, like I said, not many people are able to find out it's Lyme right away. And you could have been that one success story, right? Like do what you're supposed to do and go about your life. So it's very saddening to hear that.
Yeah, it's, I think it shows that medical education piece is so important, because these doctors, you know, oftentimes what we hear is they possibly have one slide in their entire, you know, medical school journey on Lyme and tick-borne disease. And if you have old school, you know, teachers, professors, you know, doctors that are teaching you, they might still be teaching you that it's rare and it's not worth exploring, or it's not real, right? Which is really, really unfortunate.
Yeah. And, you know, I go back and I think a lot about this. It's like, do we blame the doctors, right? Like, sometimes yes, sometimes no. I think, you know, each scenario is different, because initially my primary care doctor, he knew it was a bullseye rash from a tick, because he asked me all these random questions. And then he said, if in the next week or so you get the flu or sick at all, you call me right away, you know? So in that instance, no, shame on him, right? Shame on him. And then there's doctors that just don't have the tools or the knowledge, or truly believe that, you know, Lyme only lives in Connecticut. I don't know. And then, you know, but we go back to schooling, and, you know, probably in these textbooks or these doctors, there's like a chapter on nutrition, right? Like we're not being taught all of the things that they need to be taught. So it's kind of like a 50-50 whether we want to be mad or not, right? But where does that get us anyways? Yeah. Nowhere.
Exactly.
We just need to spread the awareness, right, and the proper information out there. Okay, so then you were already sick, so then where did you go? Did you not believe him, or did you kind of take things into your own hands because you knew it was Lyme?
Yeah, you know, I wasn't sure. I think, and I'm sure, you know, you and probably so many of your listeners most likely also experience this. You're just confused, right? You don't really know what to do. You don't really know where to get help. Because in my case, you know, I did have exposure to the medical system beforehand, but for very normal issues, right? Sinusitis, things like that, where it's pretty widely accepted. And there's a cut and dry specialist, right, that you go to for that treatment and to figure out how to help you. So from there, I took a step back and I was like, maybe I will get better. Maybe, you know, this is a summer cold, a summer flu. They could always explain it away. And unfortunately, that was not the case. And I, over the course of 2 years, just got sicker. And it would ebb and flow for probably the first 4 to 6 months, where I'd have good weeks and I'd have bad weeks. And then about 2 years later, I realized that I was losing my memory. And I was 22 years old. I was like, I'm too young to be losing my memory, to be so exhausted that I can't get out of bed, to be in full body pain. So I started seeing just specialist after specialist, trying to figure out what was wrong. What started happening to me eventually was my thyroid started getting bigger and smaller. It would swell to the size of a golf ball and it would go down. They thought I had thyroid cancer. I had my thyroid biopsied 3 times. And eventually was just kind of at the end of my rope, right? And had been told everything from, tons of exploratory testing, blood work, biopsies, to I saw one thyroid specialist who said, it's not possible for your thyroid to get bigger and smaller. It's all in your head. You're too stressed, which I think probably everybody's heard at one time, with this disease, it's all in your head.
Yep.
And nobody would choose, obviously, to live this way or to live with this illness. And eventually ended up reconnecting with a doctor that had helped me when I was 5 years old. And I used to pretty chronically get mycoplasma pneumonia. And this is the doctor when I was little that helped me. And I found his email and I found where he was practicing and I reached out and he agreed to see me. And now he just happened to be practicing in infectious disease within an integrative and functional medicine unit at a major, ironically, at the same major hospital system that told me, we're not going to test you for Lyme because it's so rare. And he saw me and was like, I think you have Lyme disease. Have you ever been tested for Lyme? And that's when they finally tested me for Lyme disease. And on the Western blot, I came back as like inconclusive. And thank God he knew enough to say, this testing is inaccurate. I think you have Lyme disease. And he sent me to a specialist.
Thank goodness for him, right?
Yeah. Like, yes.
That is crazy.
Oh, absolutely.
That is so frustrating. So you went through this for a few years. So you get your testing. And yes, that's even, more power to him for knowing that our testing is not accurate, right? Like that's another one of our problems within this community. There's many of them for sure, right?
Yeah.
So then he sends you to a Lyme literate doctor or?
Yeah, he connected me with a Lyme literate doctor in Wisconsin that had helped one of his other patients. And I called and got in a couple of months, there's always waits to see these doctors, and went and spent basically a full day at this practice and had all of, the Igenics blood work and all the things. And, a few weeks later got the call that I had come back positive for Lyme and, I call it Lyme and Co, a bunch of other, co-infections. And I remember getting that call and on one hand being so upset that there actually was something wrong with me. But on the other hand, feeling this sense of like relief, like, oh my God, there's something wrong with me. I'm not crazy.
And I think that's a normal reaction. Feeling. Yeah. Because it's, we get so excited. Oh my gosh. Yay. Somebody acknowledged that. Yes, I'm sick. Yeah. Right. And then for me, it was like, once I figured out what Lyme disease was, I was like, ooh, could I have something else, please? Mm-hmm. Not really sure I want that. Right. But yeah, it's very validating for somebody to say that there is something wrong with us besides the fact that we're overworked or stressed or depressed or it's in our head or a hypochondriac, because that's what we get told, time and time again. So, all right. So then what did your journey look like from there? What types of protocol did you go into?
I'm like, oh gosh, how much do you want to know?
Right. I know these are hard. We have to put in all these years into, like a 30-minute show.
I know. So I'll try to give you the quick version, but I am Italian, so I feel like I'm always slightly long-winded. So I started my journey with this doctor in Wisconsin, who I adored. I think he really cobbled me back together. I started, with like your classic doxycycline, herbs, supplements, and was originally told by somebody in his practice, oh, you're young, you'll be fine in 6 months. 6 months came and went, I was not fine. So the founder of this practice ended up taking me on as his patient because I was considered quote unquote a complex case, which now looking back on what I know now, I think I probably wasn't any different than anybody else. I think we're all complex. And that was when I started doing IV therapy. I had a PICC line put in. I did a lot of IV rosuffrin, which I really actually credit with saving my life. My organs were shutting down at that point. I was really, you know, like so many people listening, I was really, really sick. And I think that gave me like the boost I needed to keep going. Eventually this doctor kind of put together that there might be something else wrong. So I just was not responding to these treatments, in the way that most other people do. And that's when I was also diagnosed with dysautonomia, which made sense because I was always, you know, I was standing up and blacking out. My heart rate would race and race and race and not be able to calm down. And I had always attributed it to babesia because it's very similar to babesia symptoms. The other really key piece of my journey is we also explored immune deficiency, and that's how we discovered that I have specific antibody deficiency and I really needed IVIG therapy, which is where you essentially infuse a medication made from donated, you know, blood plasma, immunoglobulins. But if you have no IgG, IgM, or IgA, like your immune system, like I did, it doesn't matter what you're putting into your body can't respond, right? So I started IVIG, and that really was like a turning point for me. It was a rough 3 or 4 months. I know that there's a lot of practitioners now that do know to explore immune deficiency and IVIG for those with Lyme and tick-borne disease. But once I got through that first 3 or 4 months, I started to notice little changes, you know, a little bit of energy, a little less pain. My memory got a little better. And I stuck with that for a while, for probably 2 to 3 years. I still do it to this day. And then eventually, now this is about 2 years ago, was connected to Dr. Richard Horowitz. Okay. And started working with Dr. Horowitz, who I absolutely adore, and did dapsone therapy with him. And it, you know, I had a lot of things wrong with me that we spent about a year figuring out before I even got to the actual dapsone therapy. But now I've been with Dr. Horowitz for about 2 years, and he, like, knock wood, I like to say I'm mostly well now, because of dapsone. So that's kind of where I'm at in my journey now.
Okay. And so can you explain a little bit about what this dapsone is?
Yeah. So, it's essentially, dapsone is an individual medication. But dapsone is a protocol, and it essentially is a very specific combination of antibiotics and medications that you take alongside like supplementary items, like methylene blue and glutathione and certain herbs. And it's the protocol that Dr. Horowitz, it's been peer reviewed and published now in research, like I want to say 6 or 8 times. For Lyme disease, Bartonella, and Babesia. And you essentially pulse these antibiotics for 4 weeks. And I always tell people it's, for me, everybody's different, but for me, it's not the worst treatment I've ever done. I think people hear about dapsone therapy and they're like, oh God, I don't know if I can get through it. But I think for me, IV therapy, as far as like Herxheimer reactions, was probably the worst Herxing item I ever did. There's a lot of information now on dapsone therapy. Project Lyme has a great live talk on it with Dr. Horowitz. You can also just type in, you know, Dr. Horowitz dapsone therapy, and all of his peer-reviewed research will come up. But yeah, there's some good readily available resources now online.
Okay. You know, and you brought up a couple of good points, and that was, you know, kind of going back to before Horowitz when you were doing the IV rosuffrin, right? Mm-hmm. So I tell people that I chat with all the time that once you decide what direction you want to go in your journey, right? What treatment do I want to do? What do I want to try? You need to be all in, right? Like you really need to change that mindset. This is my protocol. This is what's going to get me well. But then you got to give it some time, right? Because there's a lot of things that don't change. And so I think that you need to give it a fair amount of time. And if you're not seeing that needle move, right, it's got to move a little bit eventually. And if it's not, then whatever you're on is not either working for you or it's not working for you right now, right? So the Resefin was your first big game changer.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a great point to make is, you know, Lyme, it's like peeling an onion. I think every little thing you do adds up and it's so hard to see it when you're in the thick of it. But then ultimately when it does add up to one big massive step, you look back and you're like, wow, I've come really, really far. You know, I also think it's important to remember that there's probably not one singular thing that is going to work for everybody, right? In the same sense that like the way you treat acute Lyme is very different than how you treat chronic Lyme or neurological Lyme. And I feel like I hear success stories for Dapsone. I do also a lot of work with like Bill Rawls. I can't even tell you how many success stories I hear from like the Restore Kit. I hear success stories for tons of other treatments. So, you know, if you're listening and you know somebody that's tried this one thing and it hasn't worked for you, don't give up because you will find what works for you. It might just not be the same as what has worked for somebody else you know.
Yeah, you know, and I think that that can honestly almost be half the battle, finding what's going to work for you, right? Because you can have, you know, you and I can have the exact same symptoms in every way possible. And what worked for you may not work for me. I mean, it's just one of the reasons why Lyme is so complicated because it's not the same for everyone. So, so Resefin was a huge thing for you. And then the Dapsone was another huge thing for you. And you think that those two, because I think a lot of times, you know, like even just myself looking back on my journey, I can pick together pieces that I think were like game changers, right? Put them all together. Like we throw this kitchen sink at it. And then there's like three things that were just, you know, totally move the needle for us. So those were your two, so to say then.
Yeah, I would say it was the Resefin that I really think saved my life, the IVIG that kind of built my body back up. Important to look into, you know, maybe if you're not responding to therapy or you're just getting sick all the time with acute illnesses, that can be another symptom of immune deficiency. There's many of them out there other than specific antibody deficiency. And there are studies now that, you know, there's a correlation between tick-borne illness and immune system dysfunction. So I think it's important to look into. And then, yeah, definitely the Dapsone therapy for me and going through, you know, that Dapsone, double Dapsone therapy with Dr. Horowitz was huge for me.
That's awesome. And so I don't talk with a ton of people that have gone the antibiotic route. You know, and if you're listening and you've listened to me for very long, you know that that's not always my first choice, right? I'm not totally against it. But I don't think unless it's, you know, you just get bit, you just got diagnosed, you know, like we could have saved you because you knew right away you had it or we thought, right? So my thought is that if you have chronic Lyme, it's not your first choice, but it's still an option, right? Like, because I want to kind of ask you about that a little bit. What did that do to your gut? Because I know that that's, you know, one of our huge issues is that, you know, 80% of our immune system is in our gut anyways. And our gut is usually a hot mess when we're going through this Lyme journey, right? And then we beat it up with antibiotics. And so how did that kind of like your gut journey go for you?
Yeah. So when I first started treating and I was treating with the first doctor I saw, they did not take care of my gut the way that they should have. I think also just kind of newly being diagnosed and knowing from like the mainstream conversation that doxycycline is normally the first choice. You just don't know, right? You're uneducated when you're first diagnosed. So my gut was absolutely a wreck when I started with antibiotics. I would say through Dapsone, because I did it with Dr. Horowitz himself, he is adamant that the gut has to be in check before you can do any form of treatment. So I spent like a year getting my gut back together until my stomach was working, my digestive tract was working, and I could successfully, you know, eat and not have discomfort. So he takes that very, very seriously, but I know that not all doctors do, you know, and, it's something that I think should be a consideration no matter what therapy you're doing, you know, even if you're doing natural therapies, which I'm a huge fan of herbal therapies. That's now, I do a lot of herbal therapy for my, kind of like maintenance, I'd call it. And it works really well for me. And it for me, it has no impact on my gut, which I love.
Right. And I mean, just for me, kind of, you know, we learn so much about our bodies as we're trying to figure out this journey and navigate through it. I had a messed up gut from the day I was born. Like I just did, right? So I didn't need antibiotics to come on board with me to ruin my gut because it was already there, right? So the gut health is so important. And I like to hear that Dr. Horowitz is, you know, acknowledging that first, because there are a handful of doctors that I've, you know, chatted with that are like, no, we got to build the foundation, right? And the foundation starts with your gut. So I love that because I think it's a great approach. Do you recall some of the things or some of the therapies or things that you took to help with your gut repair?
You know, it was a lot of very specific, like pre and probiotic strains.
Okay.
And a bunch of other stuff, but I can't recall anything specifically. I'm sure there's something like on Horowitz's website. I will say one of the things that helped me a lot and continues to help me a lot, and this is going to sound so simple, but is digestive enzymes. I still take them with every meal. And it's, once again, it's more of just a maintenance item for me now. But I do think it helps, especially if you're eating a lot of like raw vegetables or like really dark leafy greens, which I know sometimes can be rough on the digestive tract, despite the fact that I love them. So
So not all great things are great for our body, right? Like not every part of it, but So, and I think that that's, you know, important to kind of bring up. I've kind of chatted with like the whole wide range of people, right? People that get well and then they kind of go back to their old life. I've chatted with people that get well and they do maintenance, like yourself, Allie, and myself, right? Like there's certain things I'm going to do forever, not because I'm sick, not because I have symptoms. It's because what it is an amazing thing, right? And then when it comes to like a modality, because I've already invested in the modality, why let it sit there? I'm going to utilize it, right? So, and I think it's for maintenance. And then I talk to other people who, you know, get well and then they're petrified to get off of anything. They just want to like treat forever, right? And it breaks my heart because we shouldn't walk away from this journey in fear, right?
Absolutely.
We should walk away knowing that the knowledge that we've gained through this journey is very powerful, right? Let's take that information that we have and put it to good use and not live in fear. And, you know, oddly enough, just a few weeks ago, I found a couple of ticks on my arm. And I was at, like you, I'm not a woodsy person at all. But we kind of got off track and ended up in these bushes. And I was kind of looking at my skin and I saw these two ticks. And honestly, that's the first time I've ever had a tick on me that I visually saw. And only the second tick I've ever seen in my life. So it was kind of interesting. I'm like, okay, Tanya, just landed on your arm. You saw it. You take it off. You throw it away. you're good. Don't freak out. Don't like, yeah. Right? But it was interesting because I'm kind of walking myself through this and I was out of town and I'm like, you're going to go back when you get back home and you're going to maybe double up on your cystis tea and mm-hmm. add some extra colloidal mm-hmm. silver. And, you know, like just do it. You're good. You got this, you yeah. know, and I'm fine. And it really was reassuring to me that it's okay to be yeah. out in the wilderness and it's okay to see a tick and it's okay to have a tick land on you. Like, it's not okay, but you know what I mean? Like, don't freak out. Don't lose your whole sense of, oh my gosh, I'm going to get sick again. Right. Because we kind of are yeah. what we say and we are what we think. So keep that positive mindset because we don't want to live in fear. We've had a long enough, miserable enough journey that it's time for us to go and live our lives. Right.
I agree with you. You can't live in fear. You have to live your life. You know, I feel like I say that all the time about many different things and many different situations that some people may view as risky, right? Like going for a walk near the trees, or I love, we live 4 minutes from downtown Nashville, but like I have a big urban garden in my front yard and I'm, you know, knee deep in tomato plants every day, you know, pruning, and that might freak somebody else out, or even getting on an airplane, you know, with COVID. I know some people that still won't travel, and like to each their own, but I'm like, I didn't come this far to sit in my house and, you know, never leave my house. I've worked too hard, you know, to feel okay the past 8 years. Right. You know, and I think getting to experience like the joy of life is really, really special again, even in little moments.
It absolutely is. Yes. And I'm glad that you feel that way because there's not a lot of people mm-hmm. that do. But that's mm-hmm. like my hope for people is, no, we, you know, it transpires who we are going through this journey, but it always turns out to be a good thing, right? The yeah. other side of it is truly amazing. But I just think that tools is knowledge. Mm-hmm. Knowledge is power. Like, we have this information because most of the people listening out there have had to be their own advocate, right? So we've Absolutely. Learned about our body. We are in tune with our body. When something feels off, we know it, right? Listen mm-hmm. to that. Just be open to listening to your body and moving forward that way instead of just living in complete fear, for sure. Mm-hmm. So anyways, I love it. So tell me, I know that we chatted a little before we started recording today. Tell me what you do in the Lyme community, because I always love to hear this, because a lot of times the journey takes us to a totally different area that we never thought we would ever be at, right? And I just discovered that we're kind of involved in some of the same things. So I'd love to hear what exactly it is that you're doing out there.
It's funny because 8 years later and tick-borne illness touches, I feel like, every aspect of my day-to-day life, but in the best ways, which I never, you know, thought I would be able to say. So when I first got sick, I was in celebrity and entertainment PR, very, very different, you know, than what I do now. And I had to take a 2-year break from work because I was, you know, as we were discussing, I was so sick, couldn't get out of bed. And in that time, you know, you really learn about what patients have to endure when they have this disease. And, you know, the lack of resources, the lack of education in the medical community, the lack of research, because the federal dollars, you know, for tick-borne illness are not good. It's like a little over $100 a person, whereas malaria, you know, last year alone, they spent $1 billion in federal funds researching malaria. And I got really heavily involved with an East Coast tick-borne illness nonprofit, helped them just as a volunteer expand outside of New York to start hosting their first ever galas in Chicago and in Miami and all over, raised a little over $1 million for this organization. And through that, really, really got to know the patient community, got to meet, you know, hundreds of patients across the U.S., you know, found this amazing community of patients online. And I had kind of accepted the fact that I would never go back to work. I would never be well enough to work again. And I just was going to do advocacy and volunteer. And I was happy with that. And then ended up at some point being well enough about 5 years ago to go back to work, and went into healthcare PR. Started, you know, originally I had my own celebrity and entertainment public relations firm. And this time restarted as healthcare, but mission-driven healthcare, where 100% of my clients impact the patient community positively in some way. So like ILADS and Dr. Rawls and Casey Kelly and, you know, all of these other companies that are really doing good for patients and need the visibility. So I do that for work, and then I'm lucky enough to now serve as the chair of the board for Project Lyme, which is a 501c3 based on the East Coast. We fund research. We do a lot of patient advocacy. We funded 4 PSAs this year that have now run nationally and earned about $1 million worth of media value, which is really nice, meaning a lot of people are seeing those PSAs. Through that service with Project Lyme, 2 weeks ago, I got to meet with senators that were here from Australia at the Australian consulate to help consult on their policies and how they are going to address tick-borne disease in Australia, which was pretty cool. And then last week, got to co-host a press conference with Senator Gillibrand in New York as she announced a new $200 million push for federal funding in addition to what Center for Lyme Action is fighting for, which is great. So we'll see what happens with that. And our organization, along with Olivia Abrams, who's on the junior board of Project Lyme and the co-founder of TickMitt, we will continue to consult on that $200 million federal push. So I get to be involved in a lot of different ways, which is really neat. I feel like I get to see the best sides, you know, of everyone that is really working to change lives. And because of that, I feel so confident that we'll see a massive change in our lifetime. I think, you know, you and I, through our work with Center for Lyme Action alone, can probably say in the last, you know, 5 years that we've seen a massive change already. So we'll see what happens.
Wow, that's incredible. Thank you so much for all you do. Like, that's a lot. And I know that I probably don't need to thank you, because I know just knowing that you're making a difference is all the thanks you need, right? Because it truly is such an amazing feeling to be able to help those, however it may be, whether it's navigating them through the journey, whether it's, you know, helping to raise funds or spreading the awareness, whatever it is that we do, it just can fill our cup full. At least it does for me. Like, it truly just fills my soul with happiness. And I too, like you, that was kind of how I started, was I thought, okay, I'm never going to be able to work, right? I'm too sick. I'm never going to be well enough. So I'm just going to have a voice in the community, you know, and that was kind of how things started for me when I first ran a nonprofit. And then it's just kind of moved up along, you know, and now I work and I'm well, and but I still get to do all the things that, you know, fill my heart. So it's an amazing feeling. And yes, for the listeners out there, you heard it from Allie. We're going to make a lot of progress, right? I know that when I got diagnosed in 2015, so here we are 9 years later, things have improved so much, right? Like, there's more doctors that are familiar with Lyme disease than there was 9 years ago, even though we're far from where we need to be, right? So far from where we need to be, but there really have been a lot of strides forwards in the Lyme world. And when it comes to, you know, testing is so much better now, even though, right, like all of that. So just watching things transpire over the last 9 years, I can confidently say, like you, like it will be in my lifetime that we're going to see huge differences being made. And, you know, that hopefully this isn't going to be that unknown pandemic that, you know, nobody wants to know or talk about or hear about. So, but it's, you know, voices like ours that get heard out in the community that truly make the difference. So
absolutely.
You're amazing. And I appreciate you so much.
Yeah. Well, you're amazing. It takes one to know one. So that's all I can say.
Oh, very sweet. Well, Allie, it's been amazing meeting you. And thank you for sharing your journey with us. And it sounds like we're going to be probably working together in the future with the Center for Lyme Action anyway. So this definitely won't be our last little chat. I'm sure of it. But it's been great. I appreciate you sharing with us.
Thank you so much for having me. This was such a fun conversation. It made my heart so happy. And I'm honored. So thank you.
I sure hope you listeners enjoyed that episode. Whether it's hope you needed, a little inspiration today, or just maybe some validation that what you're feeling, what you're going through is real. Maybe you needed tips on how to treat at home, ideas, thoughts, detoxing, whatever it is. I truly just hope it's what you got out of today's episode. That is my only hope, is just to give back to this community in any way possible. So go to the about of this podcast, scroll down to the bottom and find that donation link. Go ahead and click on there, and anything that you'd like to donate or offer is all just going to go to help to pay towards the studio cost.